a book club and podcast for anyone who wants to explore the best mysteries and thrillers ever written. I'm your host, Sarah Harrison.
And I'm your host, Carolyn Daughters. Pour yourself a tea or a gin and tonic.
But not a toxin.
No, and join us on a journey through 19th and 20th century mysteries and thrillers, every one of them a game changer.
Carolyn.
Sarah!
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm happy to see you again.
I'm happy to see you again. It has been a very long time.
It has.
Been 12 hours or so.
Yeah.
Maybe 16 hours. We're having technical... We've been on air for 30 seconds. We're already having technical difficulties. Several of them.
I blame it on my son since I was... he had to go to the urgent care last night and my husband and I, and especially him, you know, don't feel sorry for me. Feel sorry for my poor husband and his being sleep deprived today. But
yes,
I handle it worse. I'll definitely say that.
Mm.
Nate handles it better. Carolyn, mm-hmm. What on earth have we been reading?
Well, first of all, this is our 12th book of the year.
Ah!
What? It is Lady Molly of Scotland Yard, and it's pretty awesome. She's one of the first professional female detectives in literature.
Yeah, it was very cool. Now, we got a really cool listener comment about a female detective, and now I want to see, like, the date of who was first.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Lady Molly or the Fergus Hume one? Do you happen to know just by...
I would say
we read
it's probably...
Fergus Hume first.
Yeah, it's probably Fergus Hume's detective in the Pink Shop because Lady Molly of Scotland Yard's 1910, so she's quite a few years after Fergus Hume.
Yes.
I think like 20 years past.
I guess I don't know, like, his, like, length of his writing career.
Unless he had, like, a 60-year, you know, like, really prolific, which he might have. I think he was a prolific writer.
The cool thing is Lady Molly was written by a lady. So now I kind of want to read The Pink Shop and compare the lady detective written by a man versus written by a lady.
I would like, so The Pink Shop is now on my list. Before we get to that, though, how about we... discuss our sponsor this month.
Yeah, I love our sponsor.
Our sponsor is amazing.
Our sponsor this month is...
Grace Sigma. Grace Sigma is a Denver-based... What? I'm in charge of reading the sponsor write-up.
I thought it was the other one.
No.
Thanks for interrupting me.
No. Now, we never discussed which one was going to come first.
No, it's whoever talks faster.
Okay, so... Listeners, this is how this goes. We usually record in the afternoon, but today we're maybe both a little sleep deprived, Sarah more than me, and we don't normally do this in the morning. So maybe we need like a big cup of coffee.
It's going to be an extra fun podcast.
This is going to be so fun.
Brought to you by Grace Sigma.
Right. We're like minutes in and we've discussed nothing so far. So it's only up from here. Our sponsor this month is Grace Sigma. Grace Sigma is a Denver-based process engineering consultancy specializing in the intersection where business process meets technology. Grace Sigma works nationally in such industries as finance, telecom, and government. They use lean methods to assist in documentation development, data dashboarding, storytelling, process visualization, training, and project management. Whether you're a small business looking for Whether you're a small business looking to scale effectively or a large corporation whose processes have become tangled, Grace Sigma can help. To learn more or to schedule a free consultation, email info@gracesigma.com. That's GRACESIGMA.com. And Grace Sigma, we love this company.
Yeah, thanks, Grace Sigma.
You're awesome, Grace Sigma. Grace Sigma is run by our own Sarah Harrison.
It's true.
And it's a pretty awesome company, but Sarah's a pretty awesome person. And if you think she can help, definitely reach out.
I'll do my best.
She will do better than that. She will do awesome.
I'll do someone else's best.
Who is our listener of the month this month? Oh, I have that as well here.
Yeah.
Oh, I have a lot of reading today.
The other sponsor. That's all right.
Well, I'm going to tell us about our listener, and you're going to tell us about the book.
I'm going to be so excited about the listener. I'm just over here brimming with excitement over this month's listener.
She is. It is true. Our listener this month is Maddie Kanga. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Maddie has weighed in on Fergus Hume. And a story called, or a novel called, The Pink Shop. We have not looked into this yet, but we are both interested in reading it, as it includes an avant-garde lady detective.
Yeah, that's what we were discussing earlier. We were both really intrigued by your comment, Maddie. And did you know, listeners, we have a blog? We do. It's on our website, and you can read it, and also read Maddie's comment, and read our reply, where we say, we'd like to send you a sticker.
Which is what we do when you weigh in on our podcast episodes, our book selections, or just say hello on our website or on our Facebook or Instagram pages at Teatonic and Toxin. We send you a sticker.
Yeah, we do.
And they're awesome stickers. They're beautiful.
And your comments are awesome, and we love it. And Maddie's clearly a super smarty pants reading Fergus Hume's other works.
So, yeah.
Cool. Yeah. We're excited about that. There's so many obscure books left to read in the world. If you didn't know that, just rewind a little bit and listen to more of our podcast.
Which you should do anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
So Lady Molly of Scotland Yard.
This is a cool one.
Yeah.
Lady Molly features a female detective who uses her feminine intuition to solve crimes. The author, Baroness Orczy, also wrote the Scarlet Pimpernel books and The Old Man in the Corner, featuring an armchair detective who solves crimes while talking to a female journalist. All these sound interesting. Mm-hmm. Lady Molly is a collection of short stories and a light, quick read. The stories have simple plots, and Lady Molly solves entertaining cases using disguises, eavesdropping, entrapments, and, of course, her intuition. The structure of the stories is familiar to the Sherlock Holmes stories. Each story is narrated by Mary Granard, Lady Molly's assistant and confidant. Mary worships Lady Molly, really kind of by her own admission. I think she uses the word worships, frequently referring to her in grandiose terms, such as my sweet, womanly, ultra-feminine, beautiful lady. Does she say ultra-feminine?
Yeah, that's a direct quote.
I missed that one. Mm-hmm. Sweet, womanly, ultra-feminine. I'm going to start referring to myself that way.
I'm going to start referring to you that way.
We're agreed. In the first story, Mary is working for Scotland Yard in the female department and is told to help Lady Molly with a case that has stumped the male detectives. By the third story in the collection, Mary is working as Lady Molly's private secretary. In the last two stories, we go back in time. In these origin stories, which are really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, okay, anyway. In these origin stories, we find out what originally led Molly to the acknowledged queen of county and town society to work for Scotland Yard in the first place. The story brings us full circle as Lady Molly finally solves the crime that has long threatened to ruin her life and that of her secret husband.
Secret husband.
Captain Hubert. Happy once again, Lady Molly retires from Scotland Yard.
I have to say she seemed pretty happy even before we knew she had a secret husband.
Yeah, I thought, honestly, she was kind of on the level of these, I would almost call them sociopathic detectives who are just like, I don't care if someone was killed. I just care if it's hard enough case for me to solve.
Mm.
You know, it's like, well, this is all about me and my puzzle mastering, not necessarily like any deep sympathy with the human race. Which then at the end you find Lady Molly's motivation was totally different. She was like, the whole reason she got involved with Scotland Yard because of this tragedy with her fiance, secret husband.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought that was interesting. I found it a little confusing. I was not expecting her to have a secret husband.
I wasn't either. Carolyn told me right before the podcast that I needed to read the end of the book.
But I didn't tell you why.
No, which I appreciated.
Yes.
Because I was like, what? We had been reading this, and if you're reading it, you might have thought also, like, well, this is a funny little collection of little lady detective stories.
Yeah.
And they're all just, like, episodic, you know, unrelated to one another. And then Carolyn's like, no, the last two are related and everything, so.
And integral to understanding how these stories wrap up.
Yeah, it's kind of her origin story, which is cool. I don't know that we've gotten an origin story, but they're really popular right now in terms of, like, movie making.
Give me an example.
Of, like, origin stories?
Yeah.
The Joker's origin story.
Oh, okay.
Like, Batman, it's a whole thing now where every villain has their own origin story.
Okay.
And they're always sort of retelling. In fact, it's kind of gotten a lot of criticism in the popular press. Like, we don't want to know everyone's origin story. Some people appear and they're maniacs. Let's let it be.
Yeah.
But origin stories are a real thing right now.
Well, from the villain standpoint, I guess it could potentially help us identify with that villain in a way we wouldn't if we didn't know that they had this terrible childhood and all these other things.
Yeah, happened. But have we gotten one yet? I mean, we don't have. And why did Inspector Bucket turn to the detective agency?
Why did Sherlock Holmes, like, what was his childhood
like?
What
abuse, like, made him into the man that he is today?
Yes.
No, but Lady Molly has a legit origin story, and it kind of wraps up her story and her purpose, and I thought that was pretty cool.
I'm pretty sure Edgar Allan Poe's Detective Dupin was never a child.
Right, yeah. The origin of these folks, they just kind of appear. They're these little geniuses that do their thing, but Lady Molly, we find out, has all along been moving with this really personal purpose.
Yeah. Kind of in the background. And I had thought she was kind of happy all along, you know, going to take tea, you know, going to investigate this, traveling here, traveling there. I just thought, well, she's leading a pretty interesting life.
Well, she's a piece of work, though, and we really see at the end, like, maybe she is happy all along. I mean, in spite of whatever's going on in your life, I feel like you can compartmentalize to an extent and find some fulfillment. But also, you know, we see in, like, the last two stories what a huge faker she is. And, like, her ability to appear one way when she's completely the opposite inside.
Yeah, so she's all about the disguises and, you know, she wants to take risks. And at one point, she and Mary, her confidant, spend like a month in disguise at some house. It's like it's weeks.
Yeah, no, that reminds me. Who was? I'm so brain dead today. Who was the guy that, like, disguised himself and lived in the apartment?
Oh,
in one of our recent books.
That is the Big Bow Mystery,
and that's right.
It's the detective
Wimp.
Inspector Wimp of Scotland
Yard.
Yeah,
it was one of these two dueling detectives in Wimp. You know, if you're, like, listening to this, if you're power listening to this on a road trip to Christmas or something, and you're going to be like, you guys can't remember what you said in the last episode. Yay, it's been a month for us. It was a break. But, yeah, Detective Wimp, like, disguised himself and lived in the apartment and, like, secretly ransacked this guy's room every night. And And it's really, like, the techniques that folks use back in the day. You know, Bucket would do the same thing. Like, the poor kid just lived in fear because Bucket was everywhere and always kicking him out of wherever he was.
Yeah.
And so they're just
always... And insinuating himself into people's homes.
Yeah,
and
they're just always sneaking around and tricking people.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting that I think almost all of that's illegal.
Today. Oh, yeah. No, a lot of it. Yeah, Molly is, Lady Molly is crossing a lot of lines and boundaries.
Well, it's interesting. Like, I don't know. It seemed like the only way that a lot of people could solve these crimes was through trickery. Do we solve fewer crimes today? Or, you know, all these laws about directness. Were a lot of people like wrongly entrapped using these tricky techniques who were innocent? Or I just wonder about kind of the evolution of the legal system that's kind of we're seeing along with these books.
So are the books reflective of what was happening, or are the books telling fictional stories about what would be fun if it could happen?
I feel like we have to assume that the techniques are real, or it wouldn't have any element of believability at the time. But as far as like the effectiveness of the techniques or how often they misfired, I don't feel like I have any insight into that, but I feel like they must have misfired quite a bit for the legal system to change so drastically from then to now.
Yeah, like very much anything goes. Lady Molly and Mary are in disguise a lot. They're hiding out in a house. They are eavesdropping through the curtain. They are all the stuff.
Right, Mary's always the secret witness. I feel like sometimes it's like, well, it's a good thing you have to have a hired companion that you can place everywhere to be your secret witness to everything, because sometimes that's all it takes is you have this extra witness to testify.
And just like in Hound of the Baskervilles, where Holmes sends Watson off to go, you know, go to this other, you know, other area of England and go accompany this gentleman in his home and, you know, look out for the Baskerville curse and, you know, find out what's going on. Molly does the same thing with Mary, like sends her like, hey, board this train and go here and pack your bag. And oh, by the way, wear a disguise. Make sure you're wearing a hat and this odd outfit.
Yeah.
And
or with that clock one, you know, just like go along and do whatever they want. I'm going to stay sick in bed.
Mm-hmm.
Just do whatever they want. Or what was the one where she thought Lady Molly got beat up and hospitalized and she actually went rogue and got Molly arrested.
I think Mary's pretty awesome. My least favorite characteristic of Mary Graynard, who's, you know, Lady Molly's assistant and confidant, my least favorite characteristic of her is how fawning she is.
I thought you would say that, and I want to hear more about why that's your least favorite.
Well, so let me tell you, my favorite is that she's actually bold, she's daring, she's all the things in her own right. Like, she is the real deal in her own right. I would hire her in a heartbeat for pretty much anything if I had the opportunity. And if she didn't live in a different century and wasn't a fictional character.
I mean, I'd certainly hire her as my household person.
Yeah.
But she's wrong a lot in terms of the mysteries. She's always wrong.
Mm-hmm.
She's kind of that foil. And Lady Molly is always extremely right. What I actually thought was interesting was how often kind of Mary waffles between trusting and not trusting Lady Molly. Sometimes she's like, well, she told me to do it, so I'm gonna do it, even though I don't understand. And then sometimes she's like we just said, she goes rogue and she like calls the police and she's like, this person did it and they're a murderer and we have this and how dare they. And Mary's got the situation well in hand all the time. Or Molly's got it well in hand, but Mary's kind of screwing it up a little bit.
I feel like Mary should have had a name that didn't start with M.
Yes. That would have been easier for me.
Yeah, I just... yes, because, you know, even in writing notes, I would say sometimes Mary when I meant Molly. It's just...
Two-syllable M names.
Yeah. You know, there's only two female characters throughout the book. I feel like they could have had different first initials.
Yeah, the names have been kind of an interesting theme throughout this year, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, even in the last book, when Mary's Molly is kind of, she's toying with these two guys' affections and pinning them against each other, and the whole time Mary's like a little bit dense in terms of like, why is she doing this? It's just cruel. And she like actually kind of gets these negative feelings towards Molly.
It's one of the first times I remember a negative. The other time is when she was sent to role play as a scour maid. And she had to like scrub the front steps or something. And she said, "I admittedly, my thoughts were not as positive about Lady Molly as they usually are."
Yeah, I feel like she definitely waffles quite a bit, which was interesting. But at the same time, I'm like, Lady Molly's so right all the time. Mm-hmm. I feel like she does deserve a little bit more trust.
Yeah, just assume she's doing something that makes sense, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I liked Mary quite a lot.
Yeah.
And I liked Molly, too. I thought she was fabulous.
I like both of the characters. Mary, so that whole hero worship thing I find annoying because I think she refers to herself at various times as Lady Molly's confidant and friend. But it's very hard to have a friendship when one person is so elevated and the other is so fawning. I feel like the unequal status makes friendship difficult and always puts one in the position of being the lesser, the inferior.
I feel like there's a lot that I don't understand from our own cultural perspective that I see in all these books where there's the perspective of being in the service industry.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really an industry there, but it's also really a frame of mind, as mm-hmm. we've seen in some of the books, like in Bleak House.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I forget his name, obviously. But he grew up in service, and then he kind of felt service was humiliating, and he left. You know, and he's mm. the guy that became the ironmonger.
Okay, yes. I'm drawing a blank on his name.
And his mom was still, like, in service to the family.
Yes.
And very much like, these are my people.
Yes.
And they're wonderful, and I love them. And in their way, they have kind of... I don't know if I would... It's almost like an equal confidence in their serviceness. And it's like, you are a wonderful and perfect servant, and you have a life here, and mm-hmm. you can retire here in ease and comfort.
Right.
And we love you. But there is, like, this definite role separation, and I just feel like I just don't understand, and it's not a part of our culture, and it's not how we operate mm-hmm. today at all.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that it's, like, a bad way of operating, but I don't know if it's good either.
Well.
But it does seem like there's... Because that was one thing, too. Like, they kiss each other goodnight.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, what? I kiss my kids and my husband goodnight, but I don't kiss anyone else goodnight.
So, yeah. So I think female friends at the time of a certain class might kiss each other on the cheek goodnight sort of thing.
Yeah.
Or by greeting or something.
And it's like Molly does tell her everything, mm-hmm. but only in her own time.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And she does trust her with, like, these really... important life scenarios,
mm-hmm.
but like, she doesn't really find out her role until the end. So mm-hmm. it's a really weird friendship and relationship, but we've seen it several times during these books.
Holmes and Watson.
Yeah. And these kind of ways that people adore each other. And I just wonder about it.
So in Hound of the Baskervilles, I felt like Sherlock Holmes demonstrated caring for Watson and concern for his well-being in a way that I didn't see on the page. I didn't see Lady Molly do toward Mary, at least on the page.
That's interesting, because I guess I felt really differently about that.
Mm.
I felt like Lady Molly was always kind
mm-hmm.
to Mary. Like, she loved Mary, and she never said these weird... backhanded, arrogant, like, they're supposed to be compliments, but they're actually insults.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she never said that crap to Mary. She always just, like...
She could be impatient with Mary at times.
Kind of loved her.
At times she would say things to Mary like, don't waste my time making me tell you what this detail is. Let's go. So she, you know, go work as a charwoman at the so-and-so mansion. Don't ask me why, I don't have time to tell you.
But it's certainly not on the level of, like, you are the conduit for my own genius and
yeah,
luminosity.
That's true. Like... Yeah. I mean, this is all coming from Mary's perspective. She's our narrator. So Molly is going to come across as nearly perfect as a character can come across.
I would think so, but I don't feel that way about Sherlock.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even though Watson, I'd say, is, I don't know if... Maybe I would say equally adoring in his own way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to me, Sherlock comes across as this really smart jerk. And I can't necessarily figure out why Watson acts the way he does towards Sherlock, whereas I found Lady Molly to be like actually genuinely charming.
Mm-hmm.
Like she could charm any situation, and that was part of the way she worked.
Yes. Yeah. She always kept her composure. She always seemed serene and at peace, and you know, she could smile equally to somebody she loved and somebody she was trying to, you know, deceive.
Yeah. Even when Mary got her arrested, she mm-hmm. was like, "Now, Mary, you got me into this. You'll have to get me out of it." And was just like not fazed.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Pretty laid back generally. But I think part of that is why I felt like she was leading a pretty good life. She seemed to have enough money to live.
Yes, she did.
She lived well.
She had her place in society, and that didn't mm-hmm. diminish.
She is Lady Molly. She's not Molly. Yeah, I mean, and then she's traveling, she's dining, she's having fun adventures. She always seems, you know, peaceful and happy, content. So when we find out in the last two stories that, no, she hasn't been content. She's been furiously in behind the scenes trying to save her husband, her secret husband.
She's always revisiting the scene of the murder. Mm-hmm. She's always got this on her mind.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I feel like the distance that she creates and the life that she creates is kind of a foil to let people, to keep people from knowing that she is trying to still, like, free him.
Right. It gives her maybe an excuse. This could have been built out into a whole bigger thing. I mean, truly, like, she's finding this reason to look for her husband without drawing suspicion to herself. Or look for her husband, the actual killer. Without drawing undue suspicion. She's part of the Scotland Yard police force.
Well, and it turned out that, like, her whole plan hinged on seeming like she wasn't in love with her, as everyone else thought, fiancé anymore. And, like, there was this distance now that she could use to kind of draw the confession out of the real killers.
Yeah.
Which was a really interesting move mm-hmm. in terms of... How do I get at this information?
Yeah. Yeah, she's very clever. I think Molly and Mary are both very clever. I would say that on the surface, I could not have solved any of the crimes in the 12 stories. But then I think a lot of the ways she solved things were just like something was in her head and she had a gut feel on it. And it's this feminine intuition that leads her to the resolution. And
well, she does always kind of come up with a trick
mm-hmm.
to kind of confirm her suspicions. Nobody's arrested on suspicion,
right?
But she gets, and that is very interesting too. Like Mary has thoughts and intuition, but mm-hmm. you know, she'll even say like Molly's next level
mm-hmm.
at it. So she kind of like she reads people,
yeah.
And we can call it feminine intuition, but really, I feel like she's an expert at reading people, and like the study of the human character, which is interesting because I thought a lot of what we've seen females portrayed as so mm-hmm. far has mm-hmm. been very one dimensional.
Yeah,
right? Like. Females are wonderfully good and stupid. this is, you know, the bit part they're playing this mm-hmm. mystery. Whereas Molly is fully like, oh, this one could definitely be a murderer. Mm-hmm. Oh, this one's super clever. She ransacked herself. You know, she's not tricked by the Victorian perception of womanhood.
Mm-hmm.
And yet she's also like the epitome.
She's ultra feminine, Mary tells us.
She is. Yeah, but she's beautiful. Also a police.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I don't know. It was really interesting. I thought it was almost like she was positioned as a woman to kind of see through not only men, but women
mm-hmm.
More than perhaps she felt like men were seeing through women at the time.
Yeah. Mary calls men like in the very beginning, she says something like, let me see if I can find this. Oh, yeah. She says, would the truth have ever come to light if the men alone had had the handling of it? And she had 10 times as much intuition as the blundering and sterner sex.
Yeah.
Blundering.
Love that.
But that actually is one of the probably only disrespectful terms used in the book, mm-hmm. which was another interesting thing. Mm. That, like, not only... So I feel like we've seen a lot of women disrespected in our books, but also just a lot of, like, intellect being treated disrespectful. Like, it's the way Sherlock Holmes or Dupont might think of people on the force. Mm-hmm. The police, the bumbling police, yeah. the stupid police.
Yeah.
They are so dumb. But Lady Molly is not either of those.
Yeah.
You know, she's always super respectful. Like, one of our best men at the yard came up with these clues. And she's just very niche. And she kind of comes in and finishes mm-hmm. off the case with no disrespect to the gentlemen involved. They right. did a great job.
Right.
They just don't have my skill set.
And they all seem to respect her as yeah, well, which I love. It's a mutual
respect.
Because I can't imagine this in almost any of the books we've
no.
read.
No. They're not even like, that dumb hysterical woman is going to get a brain fever.
Yeah.
They're just like, oh, you're handling the case. Wonderful. Yes, I will come in and arrest this person.
Right. Yeah. Whereas like with, in if this were in Mystery of a Hansom Cab or something like that, you would, I don't know, you'd almost expect her intuition to be derided. Like, oh, well, this is one of those women cases. So yeah. put the woman on the woman case and see if she uses her feminine intuition. And, you know, there's nothing derogatory shared.
No.
And the sense we get is that Scotland Yard respects her.
Yeah, they give her some of the most difficult, unsolvable cases that mm-hmm. they think she would have an advantage in.
Mm-hmm.
And then she does, and everyone's happy.
Yeah.
And it is really, it's very much like human character evaluation, and it's not... You know, like Sherlock Holmes would be like, well, I've made a study of the bites of all dogs. And this to me is a mm-hmm. curly haired spaniel bite. And so mm. from that, I deduce she doesn't do any of that. She kind of reads the situation. She comes up with what is would be like a logical solution. And then she tests it.
Yeah.
It is really different, but I thought it was really interesting.
I thought it was interesting. There's a lot in this book that addresses social class, and I think that that's so interesting. We get it from Mary's perspective, but every time somebody is in the will but shouldn't be because mm-hmm. he was dissolute and, you know, spent too much money or drank or was engaged to a woman who was not of his class.
Who got married because he thought his wife was dead, but she wasn't dead until just then, and then she was
yeah.
like, who's who's legitimate, who's not legitimate.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, and Mary says a lot. Like, I started marking on the book. She'd make these statements about this, you know, dissolute person, this, you know...
Slatternly was one of her favorite descriptions.
Yeah, person following the usual pattern common to her class or mm-hmm. common to her kind or... You know, maybe they were not tidy, or maybe their right. clothing looked dirty, or their behavior, you know, whatever it was, or they were not forthright, or they were too forthright, and it was always, she would always find this way to just tack it on to who they were from her perspective because of the class.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was interesting.
Yeah.
There were class comments, but then... I couldn't really disentangle, because sometimes she would talk about the upper class people too. I was just reading the one where Margaret Seeley and like she kind of tossed off her old fiance for a new fiance and was endangering his life and was just very cold about the fact that he might be executed. And make sure it doesn't hurt her reputation and her future prospects.
Right.
You know, so it wasn't only like the lower class was disparaged.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't quite tell. Like, I felt like Mary was just sort of maybe adding her read mm-hmm. to the situation. Like, she had a look in her eye. It was a bold look, and a conniving look, and she was slatternly, and
the look suggested poor breeding or something.
Yeah, but I do feel like they were considering these things clues, maybe they are.
And, yeah, so maybe it's the gut feel.
Maybe
where
they're,
like,
they're reading the people, and
and
that's telling them kind of the direction to intuit the solution they're going to test.
Yeah, so there's one of the stories near the end is the woman in the big hat, and Molly's able to solve this murder mystery in large part, I think, because of her gut feel of the wife, the 25-year-old wife, who seemed sketchy to her, she seemed off. And when Mary is describing her, she kind of seems a little bit off, too. She seems cold or disinterested, maybe, in figuring out who killed her husband. And
Yeah. And those are interesting. Those are, to me, like, we're always getting gut feelings about people. Mm-hmm. We're always sensing when things feel off, and we're trying to picture the pieces. Like, why does this feel off?
Uh-huh.
And sometimes it's like, I think sometimes we're genuinely unfair to someone, and sometimes we're genuinely correct, and we're just trying to piece together, why is my gut telling me this? But
don't you think, though, that sometimes our gut is telling us something correct, but we don't know the real reason why? So we're like, okay, something's off here. I'll do this, for example. I'll say, to my partner, Michael, I'll say, oh, I think something's going on here. I think this is off. And he'll say, well, why would you think that? And I'm like, I just have a feeling, but I don't know why. Yeah. So it's easy to try to then ascribe.
Well, you try and figure out why you got this feeling.
Right. So you're like, well, maybe this is what they're thinking or this is what they're doing. But I tend to not do that. I usually stop with, this felt, something's not right here. And I'm often correct. And I know you are too. You're very good at this.
It's, and I'm not sure I can always articulate, but sometimes you do, you feel a feeling.
Mm.
And I don't think that it is an illogical feeling.
Mm-hmm.
I think what you're doing a lot of times is parts of your brain are developed to put pieces together faster than you do so cognitively. And that seems like a really reasonable survival instinct.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see a snake and like, stop and think about it and be like, let me look in my snake book and see if you're a poisonous one. you see a type of movement out of the corner of your eye and you make a decision.
Yeah.
And it's a survival instinct.
Yeah.
And then later your brain can kind of try and figure out the pieces of what you're thinking. And sometimes your brain does a good job and sometimes your brain like doesn't quite gather the right pieces.
Yeah.
But it is very, I wouldn't say I stop by feeling off. I'll definitely keep going and try and gather my pieces, rightly or wrongly, and wonder, like, why do I feel this way?
Yeah.
Why am I thinking this?
Right.
And as I kind of articulate through it, sometimes I'm landing on things and sometimes I'm not.
But sometimes it's hard to know the root cause because people are complex and you have such a small fraction of the big picture. That I think you can know something's off, but and then maybe you say, well, I think it's because this thing happened and the fact that this person feels off, that can help explain it. But it could be something altogether different.
Yeah, it totally can. Well,
and often
they are limited.
Yeah,
but
we're bad mind readers, generally speaking. I'm a terrible mind reader.
That's one of the things I liked about Lady Molly is the way she would come up with testing her hypotheses.
Mm-hmm.
She'd get her gut feeling and then she'd figure out how to kind of bring it to the surface. And I thought that part was always kind of interesting to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was enjoyable. I liked this book.
I did. I liked it quite a lot.
And I had never heard of it prior to our book club and podcast. And I thought, this is pretty cool. Like, this is her actual job working for Scotland Yard.
Which is funny, too, because I know Scarlet Pimpernel, and maybe it's not as popular anymore, but I do have, like, the old-timey movie, Scarlet Pimpernel, which I assume is based on the book, though I haven't read the book.
Mm.
But I'm wondering why her other works are maybe lesser known. Because Lady Molly is really cool.
It's really cool. Yeah. I don't know. I've never read The Scarlet Pimpernel or seen the movie.
Oh, really? It's really funny. Oh, my goodness. It's like, it's so wacky.
Okay. Then I'm going to add that to my growing list of things I need to read and watch. And
listeners, and I'm going to actually read Scarlet Pimpernel. Because now I'm like, is the book that wacky? I didn't even know there was a book, but it is.
A book. I think a series, either series of stories or series of books.
He's almost like this crazy Robin Hood character, and I think he like sings and dances and leaps around, at least in the movie.
But so, yes, does that happen in the book, or was that where liberties taken?
Yeah, is he kind of this wacky? I don't know. Tell us. You tell us.
Yes.
There's clearly like people out there reading more obscure and interesting things than we are even reading.
And
so,
to be fair, it could be a while before we get to the Scarlet Pimpernel in our free time.
It is. We're reading a lot of books in order right now.
We are reading. We are keeping up. We're doing what we can. Let's talk about the end of this book.
Okay.
So she's secretly married, we learn.
Yeah. Which I went the wrong direction with that. I thought she was wanting to hurry up and marry Captain Hubert so that he would be disinherited from his fortune. Due to, like, the second will, and then people would be like, oh, well, there's nothing on him then. But that's not how it went at all. I'm always wrong about
these
things.
You thought Lady Molly wanted to marry him for the money?
No, I thought she wanted to marry him to clear him.
Oh.
Because they were like, oh, well, he's cleared then. Because I don't think I fully understood the legal aspect. Because he... You know, presumably made the second will. Mm-hmm. The grandpa made the second will that said, if you marry Lady Molly,
ever,
you're disinherited.
Ever, if you ever marry her.
And so I thought, oh, okay, well, they'll get married and he'll be disinherited and it'll show like no motive.
Right.
But that's not the legal system at the time.
So I didn't think about that. But yeah, that would have been sort of a...
I thought that's why she was rushing it. She was just rushing it because she knew he was going to jail and she wanted to marry him first.
And she loved him.
Yeah. It wasn't actually like any sort of evidence-based thing.
Yeah.
Oh, and I thought she was trying to have Mary listen in again to like, to witness all of these things. But that's not it either. Like I actually don't know why she had Mary listen into the proposal.
Yeah. So the proposal came from Baddock, right?
Well, I was talking at the beginning.
Not Baddock.
When she had Mary, first she had Mary listen to kind of her proposal.
Oh, right.
To her husband. She was like, I want to get married right now. And Mary was like, oh, well, she left the curtain open. She came back and opened the door, so I deduced she wanted me to listen. And she did, although I don't know why. But yeah, then she did the same thing 5 years later with Baddock and had Mary, Baddock's servant, Frenzel?
Friend. What is that guy's name?
Frenzel? Frazzle? Something like that. Frenel.
Uh-huh. It started with an F. Yeah. It's like Fenton or something.
Fenton? I thought it ended with an L.
Oh. Falcon.
Falcon. There's some middle L.
So there is an L. The name.
Totally.
The
That's
names
so close.
In 19th century mysteries are not intuitive.
Not to me, no.
No, not to me.
No.
So Falcon. Okay, so she's sort of playing what looks like loose and fast. Flirting with these two guys, Philip Baddock, who's the son.
Her half-brother.
That's so weird. I know.
I was, like, super puzzled. That's another thing. I'm constantly wanting to Google, like, Victorian life.
But it's never addressed that he's her half-brother.
No, it's mentioned.
Directly? No.
Only in terms of, like, if you're following the family tree, like, it turns out that Baddock is the legitimate son of this grandpa.
Yes.
From his second wife that nobody knew he had a kid with. He, like, had a kid, never brought him to England, sent him off to boarding school, whatnot. Then his wife runs off with his neighbor and has another kid.
Lady Molly.
Lady Molly, who turns out to be, I couldn't figure out, like, a lot of stuff, honestly. But one of it was, like, how wonderful her father was. Her father was, oh, father's wonderful. He's this and that. And I'm like, but didn't he steal somebody's, like, wife?
Mm-hmm.
Your mom? It's just not striking me as, like, a man of high integrity and loyalty.
Yeah.
But
yeah, it's
a
little
what to make
it's
of that.
A little interesting.
Yeah, and so then she kind of pretends to be interested in marrying Baddick and
the other guy.
And
Falcon.
And Falcon, his
like Falcon
his friend and servant. Everyone has like a friend slash servant.
Mm-hmm.
And pits them against each other. And the whole time I'm like, but half brother though. And I'm gonna Google it as soon as this episode is over to be like, was that okay then? Was that
legal?
No.
I don't think so, no.
I don't know. She was French. So
I honestly think Baroness Orsi, the author, forgot.
I think that's funny because I thought that was interesting that you said that because I feel like almost always I'm thinking the author's screwing up and you're like, no, it was on purpose. And this time I was like, maybe I've just been fully entranced by Lady Molly's skills. And I'm like, no, it was probably on purpose. And
well, I think it would have been more directly stated if it had been on purpose. And I think Baroness Orsi also seemed to forget, I don't know, what Mary did and when Mary did it. So Mary worked for
Sherlock Holmes.
She worked for Scotland Yard. Presumably she works for Scotland Yard when she meets Molly. Then Molly takes her on as her private secretary. So Mary leaves Scotland Yard to work for Lady Molly. Then we learn at the end of the book that Mary was a servant of Lady Molly's at the start. So was she a servant first, and then she joined Scotland Yard, then she left Scotland Yard to become Molly's private secretary?
We talked about this a little bit in the game. I was like, no, I think it was on purpose. Like, we went back and read it, and I'm open to being corrected here, but I don't see where, like, Mary doesn't quite come. She gives the impression of, like, her already being a member when Lady Molly joins, but it doesn't. But then when you go, it's like when you watch The Sixth Sense, and you're like, wait, let me go back. Oh, it didn't actually say that.
Yeah.
It wasn't actually that. And so I was wondering if, like, is this part of Mary's cleverness in concealing her origin story, even as she kind of releases stories of her fame, like how Watson was always releasing stories of Sherlock's fame. But Sherlock doesn't have an origin story, as far as I know.
Yeah. Yeah. And these stories were big because Mary, in narrating them, keeps making statements like, well, as you know.
I'm glad you brought that up because
these are famous stories. Like, these are case after case. These are famous cases that Lady Molly solved.
Every time I read a book, I just want to. And I don't because I read in the bathtub. But I just want to be Googling stuff the whole time and say, like, because the way she talks to the reader is like, you'll remember this case.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of referring to something common knowledge that they would have seen in the news, newspaper at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, like, is she appropriating real cases and kind of making extra stories out of them?
That's a good question.
Or is this just sort of Mary's confidential approach to the reader to be like, as you know, this totally fictional thing that you've never heard of before?
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't know.
I don't know.
I've got some Googling to do, but I can't find. I was Googling, honestly, what we're hearing, like marriage in Victorian England. And actually, I do need to dig a little deeper on this because I think it wasn't quite clear at the time. There were some changes going on between 1835 and 1907 by Parliament. So I kind of want to read some more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe she like screwed up or I forgot. Maybe it was okay and they didn't mention it.
Yeah.
I kind of had this like weird idea that maybe because the mother was French and never brought to the U.S. Mm. or not U.S. to England, like somehow she didn't count. I don't know.
Yeah. I loved that Philip Baddock was going to send Captain Hubert to Buenos Aires.
Yes. That was really interesting.
Yeah, because we saw this, something similar in Hound of the Baskervilles where the criminal wandering the moors is going to be sent, I think, to Costa Rica or somewhere.
Yeah, somewhere in South America.
Yeah, Central South America is like the Australia of the Americas. Like, just it's just populated by all of these people who have been shipped there from around the world. Like, well, you're a murderer and a criminal and a thief.
It was like an escape. If you got imprisoned, I guess you got to Australia. But if you just escaped, you went to Central America.
Yeah, you're like, well, just, you know, as long as we don't have to deal with you, yeah, you're a terrible human being and extremely dangerous. Let's send you there.
That was super interesting, though. It was like, and I was trying to get the timeline because it was like 2 years into his sentence, he escaped Captain Marsden, she said. But then it was 5 years before she could free him.
Captain Hubert.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, well, I guess this is like the full 5 years in the time span of the book. And he went back to prison for 3 more years while she was pitting these lovers against themselves.
And while she was pitting the lovers, I think she was solving the preceding 10 cases.
Yeah. And so I guess I thought he was lying and he didn't escape, but he really did escape.
He really did escape.
And he went to this guy's house and I was like, you are dingling. Obviously, this guy framed you. Why did you go to his house?
Yeah.
But it's like, this guy is so innocent of mind, and nothing ever occurs to him. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't occur to him that everyone thinks he's the murderer.
I don't think he's a worthy husband to Lady Molly. I'm just going to put it out there.
Well, he's certainly handsome. That's what she says.
Oh, well, of course.
He's handsome, and he's heroic.
And he's wealthy.
And, yeah, but so is she. So she didn't need the money.
Well, I think he's wealthier than she is. She inherited something like £25,000.
She does. He does become wealthier than she is. Yeah. I think they were kind of equals at the beginning and didn't really need the money. But when he inherits half the estate, he's quite wealthy. But
I don't know.
What I did like about him, I'll say, is that after their interview and after his escape, and she calls the police to send him back, which. Mm-hmm. That was pretty smart, I have to say. That was smart for a couple of reasons. One, she'll be able to see him again because he's not in, you know, Central America.
Right.
She has like a chance of seeing him again. And two, he kind of leaves with this devoted confidence look on his face, which I think was really lovely.
So it's really clever.
Well, she was really clever.
Yeah.
And his confidence in her was really a lovely thing.
Yeah.
I could see, like, well, of course you would be in love with that.
Okay.
You know?
And no, that's fair.
This is kind of probably a different level, but for those of you that know, we've been renovating our house for 10,000 years. that's one thing I love about my husband is when I kind of explain my vision, and he might be like, I can't visualize it, but have confidence in your vision. And I'm like, that makes me feel so good. It's like, okay. Which, because it wasn't always that way at the beginning.
Yeah.
But now.
Yeah.
We can have those conversations. And so I can really see, like, when Captain Hubert walked out, just, like, confident in his lady's abilities, I can see that she would be attracted to that.
And so he's more trusting of her than even Mary, because Mary questions Lady Molly at the end is like, what kind of game is she playing here?
Well, you know, if Captain Hubert had witnessed that, he might have his own feelings, but he went back to jail.
I didn't realize you were flirting with both men nonstop for 3 years.
I didn't know that was the plan.
Yeah.
I just knew you were going to win, but yeah, I don't think he would have taken that sitting down.
That's amazing. Yeah. and then, you know, there's a part of me that just, you know, thought she's living the life. You know, she's a single woman, traveling, doing her own thing, enjoying her life. And I was, you know, sad that she threw in the towel with her police work at the end because she got, it was sort of a conventional ending. Like, I got married and didn't have to, that was the end goal. The end game was, I am married. My husband and I are together. We are happy together. That's all we need.
Yeah, now there's all these criminals going free and innocent people dying because she is not there with her super unique set of skills.
Yes, exactly.
So that is a bummer. I'm with you on that. Mm-hmm. But I did think it was interesting, too, kind of the parallel at that end between Sherlock and Lady Molly.
Yeah. I think... For sure. They seemed, I think that they would get along quite well, those two.
Really? I didn't pair them up together. I think he's so rude and she's so charming.
But she would never let on that she thought he was rude.
I know, she wouldn't let on, but and he doesn't mean they want to, she wants to hang out with him.
No, but I think he would have been impressed by her intuition and how, now she would have, every solution he would have come up with would have been, well, I saw the notches on the walking stick and then I measured the footsteps, and she would say, my gut tells me that.
I feel like she would have solved it like a month earlier while he's going around collecting evidence.
I think
she
both would have figured out who did it, but they would have come at it in different ways.
Yeah, that's true. It would be nice to think there would be some mutual respect there, but that's kind of one of my beefs with Sherlock, is that he's kind
of... doesn't have a lot of respect.
He's universally disrespectful.
Yeah, no, that's true. Yes. Even to Watson, who he seems to care about more than anybody else.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyhow, I also wondered, now what happens with Molly and Mary's friendship now that Molly is, you know, sailing off into the sunset with her guy.
Like, she still needs her servant best friend,
yes,
right?
Yes, but their relationship would, I think, would necessarily change.
Yeah, but I wouldn't be surprised if Mary, like, took care of the kids or something.
Oh, that'll be fun. It's the middle of the night. Get the bottle, Mary. Okay.
Yeah, I remember that was, like, Queen Victoria's thing. Like, the woman that nursed Queen Victoria growing up became her kid's nurse. Ah. And they were, like, really tight friends, too.
Yeah.
Until her husband dismissed her.
What? That, my friends, is an entirely other topic.
A different Victorian story for a different day.
Well, Sarah.
Carolyn.
I mean, we've done a year of this, I think.
This is a great book to end on. I really like it.
1910. We've made it into the 20th century.
Yeah, and I'm really excited about the list for next year, which I think we're going to talk a little bit about in the next episode.
I think we are.
Oh. Yeah, next episode is cool.
It's going to be awesome. Keep listening. If you're doing that, what I think should be a movie, Christmas Road Trip. if you're doing the Christmas road trip or the New Year road trip or the Valentine's Day road trip, whatever you're doing, just listen to the podcast.
Whatever your podcast binging looks like, let's go in order. And this is our only episode for Lady Molly. And the next one, we're going to kind of do a prospective retrospective.
Mm-hmm. And Sarah, how do you want to close this out?
Let's try some tests. Stay mysterious.
Stay mysterious.
Merry Christmas.
Happy holidays. Stay mysterious.
Mystery on. Mystery closed. Podcast out.
If you have anything better than this, please share it.
Yeah, comment on teatonicandtalkzone.com.